There are five love languages as we get going with a brand new week. Do you know yours? Do you know your love languages? What are they? Acts of service, physical touch, words of affirmation, quality time, and gifts. Those are the five love languages. Wow. Yeah. How about that? Are you familiar with this book? Are you familiar with this teaching? Zach?
Is that a generic question? Or like, are you asking me or are you asking, our audience?
No, I'm asking you first specifically, but also
yeah, everybody's got two, right? They're like usually are like higher than the other ones.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a primary, a secondary, and then like a big drop off typically, and then the other three.
Yes.
Yeah. What are your two?
Words of affirmation and gifts. What about you?
Very good. You know, I've always thought you were an exceptional person, and I'll send you something in the mail later today.
Thanks,
buddy. I'm a words of affirmation and physical touch kind of guy.
I'll tell you how great you are, and we'll hold hands next time we get lunch.
That's it.
I'll give you a nice little back rub.
Sure. That'll do. That'll do just fine. No, why do I bring that up?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Because the writer of that book series is Gary Chapman. Dr. Gary Chapman. And he's like a pastor in North Carolina. He's gone all over the world with this teaching. And as Auburn has heated up in the recruiting and then got a commitment from its new dual threat quarterback recruit over the weekend, whose name is only off by one letter, all I could think, and the fact that he was committed to Wake Forest for a while, which is like the backyard of Gary Chapman's ministry. That's all I could think of was my love language is dual threat quarterbacks. We love dual threat quarterbacks. And this guy, Zach, what a long road, 2-minute intro to get to you talking about Auburn's newest quarterback commitment. He's a really good scheme fit for this offense, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's plenty of things to like, and there's also a million questions to ask, adjacent to this news, but
yeah,
you turn on the tape and he makes plays, and he makes plays against elite competition, and he makes plays in ways that you would think, okay, I could see why Alex Golish would want this to be a piece or a part of the offense mm-hmm. in the future. Not a day one starting caliber guy. Very few freshmen are.
Right.
But, I don't think that's what he's expecting. I don't think that's what Alex Golish and this offensive staff are going to ask of him. So can he come in and develop for a few years and potentially get a shot, two or three years down the line? Sure. That's certainly possible.
So let's get into some of the questions. I mean, let's get into measurables first. 6'1", 190, 123rd best player in the state of Georgia, according to 247. 247 has Auburn's recruiting ranked a little lower than other services, but just for the sake of this conversation. Yeah. Some of the scouting notes, beats defenders to the edge on RPO calls, has proven to be a tough tackle in tight quarters. Can get the ball out fast, quicker release, flashes as a downfield passer. Here's the line that got my attention. This is from 247's director of scouting. Must get more consistent with his ball placement and improving timing, but he has a chance to do damage on Saturdays in a power spread attack. It sounds like, I'm not comparing the two players, but wouldn't you say the same strengths and weaknesses apply to Auburn's current quarterback? Like there's some questions about accuracy, flashes as a downfield passer for sure, and really good in the running game.
Those things you just listed are similar. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not apples to apples. There's some differences there.
No, but the things you just listed, sure. Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. What questions? You said there's some questions. I have some questions too. What are the ones that are on your mind when it comes to this guy?
Yeah, I mean, I think timing and path to playing time is going to be a conversation in this day and age mm-hmm. around any position, but especially quarterback. And so if you look at his path to playing time, it's not immediate. And when it's not immediate, it probably means 3 or 4 years. And are guys willing to sit for 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
And you can ask that with any quarterback. You can ask that with Chapman. You can ask that with Will Mensel. Which I think would have been a little bit faster of a process. And look, I mean, we're reading in between the lines here. We're guessing, we're assuming, but I can't imagine Gary Chapman Jr.'s, NIL situation was anything close to what Will Menzel's was, or Israel Abrams, or a Peter Bork, these top quarterbacks in the class. And so what does that open up, Brad? I think it opens up when Byron Brown leaves, you have money to spend on another portal quarterback. So anytime you add a portal quarterback there, obviously it sends a message of, hey, you're not ready yet. We don't want to use you quite yet. You can say the whole, we're just bringing him in for competition as much as you want. But also, like, this staff seems to like Tristan Tia.
Yep.
And I also think they like Reese Brush. And, you know, we'll see where Lachlan Hewlett fits into all of this. But
yeah,
when you bring in a developmental type quarterback, the path that everyone has to navigate to get this guy on the field eventually, there's a lot of obstacles that pop up.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder how many people anyway hear this commitment and think, oh, yeah, we got our quarterback for next season. I don't think a lot of people do. Like, I would think most of the fan base understands you're not talking about him playing next year or the year after.
Yeah, I will add the caveat, though, that some people don't understand what a 2027 quarterback means.
Okay.
Like, you know, Auburn, Alex Golish adds 2027 quarterback.
Yeah, and that's all they see.
Yeah, I do think there's, and it's a small percentage, but it's a loud part of the percentage. He's not going to start in 2027. Like, I know. Nobody's saying he is. Nobody's saying he is. You are. Nobody's saying he is. So, But yeah, in general, yes, you're right.
Yeah. The Athletic posted a story last November about quarterbacks and the percentage of quarterbacks who transfer. Okay. So when we talk about this article and this general roster management when it comes to quarterbacks, nobody is saying you want to run specific guys off, okay? Can we all understand and be adults that that's not the conversation? But if you look statistically around the country, 75% of quarterbacks who do not play transfer out. That's the trend over a five-year period of time, and that was before the last port. Like, that was November of last year that those numbers were run. And so the idea that all of those guys you just mentioned are still on this roster this time next year, there's like a 1 in 4 shot of that. The idea, quite frankly, that any incoming freshman is still on your roster 3 years from now, I think it's a long shot. And I think, Zach, that forces you to have a different conversation. We've touched on it a little bit here and there, but when we talk about recruiting and roster management, you have to be a good steward with your NIL dollars. Are you paying top dollar for a quarterback who, like, isn't going to play next year?
Right. So a common question we got it during the Barncast last night. I've gotten it a bunch on social media, and the tone's always tough to decipher because it comes across as snarky, but I don't think it's intended as that way. But the question is, in this day and age, is it worth even getting developmental quarterbacks because they all portal?
Right.
And my response is, well, what's the alternative? If you're worried about guys leaving, 5-stars leave at arguably a more alarming rate.
Yep. That's right.
And so my question is, well, what do you want? Because then the only other alternative is you just don't sign high school quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Which you can't do.
You're right. Because then realistically, to fill out your roster, you have to add 3 portal quarterbacks.
Right. That's, which you just can't do.
That's
so
tough. Yeah,
it's a balance. If you're not going to get the 5-star guys, the program changing guys, which I think Will Menzel was that good. You go get guys who can develop. You go get a Gary Chapman Jr. And it opens the door in December when you learn kind of the fate of other quarterbacks throughout college football. And in January, when the portal opens, you give them a call. And you're able to afford that because Byron Brown's off of your payroll. You're not paying a 5-star quarterback to come in. and you kind of figure out what you do with Tristan Tia. And so was plan A to get Will Mintzel? Yes. Yes, it was. And I think then it opens up a different conversation of, can you get a portal quarterback, or do you even want to, or do you figure it out with Tia and Mintzel? But that's not where we're at. Yeah. We're here with Tia, Hewlett, Brush, and Chatman. And what happens when you go get a portal quarterback?
Right. Do you go get a portal quarterback to come in and be the starter?
Yes.
Or do you see enough from Tristan Tia this year in a backup role?
Which is a fascinating conversation.
It is. It really is, because of the roster management and the necessity of how you manage that position. Like, do you think Will Mintzel starts for Oregon next year?
I don't think Will Mintzel ever starts for Oregon.
Okay. So they got him and they're going to pay him and for to be on the roster, to be a backup option. If or when, you know, or if or until rather, he decides to transfer.
Look, and I feel that way for most five stars. If you're going somewhere and you're not starting right away, odds are you're not going to be, unless you go to Georgia, Bama, Ohio State, like one of the, you know, the top brands in college football right now. Unless you go that route, and Oregon's there, but you know, Oregon is transfer quarterback.
Yeah.
You.
They're, yeah,
if they're you're a transfer quarterback and Oregon calls you, you should go there. Their track record is ridiculous as far as getting guys to the league, which is probably what they'll do to get a guy over Mintzel at some point.
Yeah, which side conversation, it's just semantics. I don't know it's because they're developing them for the league. I think they have pro potential anyway, and it's an explosive offense to showcase what they are already capable of doing. It's you know what I mean? It's more showcase rather than developmental. Not that it matters. I mean, if they go and they get to the league, who cares? But I do think there's a distinction between the two.
There is a distinction between the two. I disagree with you, but there is a distinction between the two, for sure.
Okay. All right.
For sure.
Fair enough.
Today, anyone watching does not care about our disagreement on that topic.
No, so, and that's why I'm moving right along. Moving right along. Right. And I want to tell you that today's show is brought to you by buyauburn.com. Okay.
Yes.
You can do business with Auburn people anywhere and ever. Have you ever been in a place where you go, I would like to support Auburn businesses? I would like to maybe advertise my business to Auburn fans, and let's have like family supporting family. Buyauburn.com is that website. It's here. You have that option. So if you're searching for Auburn businesses, go to buyauburn.com, do a search. If you are an Auburn-owned business, let us know. We actually, Zach, have a few promo codes left to be one of the first businesses to sign up, and you'll get a 50% discount when you register your business with buyauburn.com. Beautiful.
I love that.
I do, too.
I love it so much.
And hearing a lot of great feedback on it, by the way, from people all over the place. So you're going to want
to get that. Which, you know, anytime you roll something out, like you want it to work and be effective for the people spending their time and money into it. And it's been super awesome to see, like, oh, I joined by Auburn.com and I picked up, you know, several new clients just in the first like 24 hours. It's like, great. That's awesome. Yeah, that is
working.
That is the goal. That is the vision. And it's great that's happening.
Yep. That's good. So, and it works when you support it, like anything, always, if it's there, if there's an audience for it and the audience supports it, then it's there. The whole key to this is supporting it. So we appreciate you guys doing that. All right. Auburn baseball is in prime position to be a national seed, and they may have already done enough to lock up a national seed, but they're not done yet. Six straight conference series wins, including this gauntlet. You got to go to Florida. Fine. We'll win the series. You got to go to Texas A&M. Fine. We'll win the series. You got to go against Mississippi State in Starkville, 15,000 rabid, hungry fans, generous with their food fans. Fine, we'll win two out of three.
Yeah.
We'll win two out of three and leave some of them so mad that they don't want to give food to opposing players anymore. One of the silliest discussions I have witnessed on social media, and that is a mouthful.
Uh-huh.
Is what? The segment of Mississippi State fans who are mad that their fans in the outfield were giving food to Auburn's players after Auburn drop kicked them mule kicked them, drug them through the mud in the finale Saturday.
I like the way Kyle worded it on the Barncast last night. Like, we whooped them so bad, we beat them so bad that they started to like us. It's what Kyle said, which was quite the pivot because they blasted us on Thursday night. That incredible first inning by their offense, and a rough inning by Jake Marciano, which, you know, hopefully doesn't happen again. It's a pretty rare instance for that to happen, but they were talking their smack. And rightfully so. I don't blame them. That was a massive win in an awesome fashion for them in front of a pretty intense home crowd Thursday night. But for Auburn to rally back and just really control the series, especially after they really, like, all momentum slipped at the end of game two to when it was tied 4-4 in the top of the ninth. I'm like, I don't think four is going to be enough. Their offense is starting to groove. And then Chase Frelick said, no, we're fine. I got this. And he just blasts one. And then, you know, props to Butch Thompson for you know, not making that pitching change, because I was questioning that decision in real time. And then to come out game three and just take it to him. I mean, what a weekend for Auburn baseball.
Jackson Sanders is that guy.
He's become that guy. Yes.
He says lefty, righty. I don't care. We don't have to, you don't have to bring in Hetzler. You can save him for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I'll finish it. I'll get him. And quite frankly, a lot of guys, like Marciano, couldn't recover from the fielding mistake. He would have been out of the first inning in 11 pitches, and who knows how that game goes.
Right.
But after the home run, it's kind of set a tone, and you pitch it differently and you play it differently. And it's like, all right, whatever. You come back and you get the next two. But, you know, he wanted the ball on 2 days short rest. He's that guy. Andreas Alvarez is a dang bulldog. He's that guy. Sanders is that guy. Petrovic is that guy.
Petrovic is the forgotten dude in all of this, and all he does is win game threes. Like, goodness gracious. If there's a rubber match, if there's a game three that matters, Auburn has won every single one that matters since the Texas game.
He's like, listen, Petrovic and Hetzler are like Paul Bunyan and Babe. When you get to the last game of a series, they're just going to go push mountains around and flex their muscle and just get it done. Paul Bunyan and Babe the Ox.
And it's not always the prettiest thing. It's not always like the most perfect innings, but like, he keeps guys from getting home, and that's all that really matters.
Well, that's it. Teams had scored runs in the first inning in bunches in three straight starts. State gets two guys on, and he strikes a guy out, gets out of the inning. Bases loaded in the second, gets out.
That was huge. Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Petro is going to stress you out a little bit, but he usually gets it done.
Hey, but he's not going to stress. That heart rate stays at like 75. Yeah. Never moves.
He's not stressed. We're stressed. He's not. Correct. He's comfortable. Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. So now you got Jack State tomorrow night. That's which is not a 25 Jack State. No, it's not. Jacksonville is not a state.
Correct.
But they just won their conference over the weekend. You're gonna face back-to-back conference champions in the last four games of the regular season.
You're right.
Yeah. So at Jack State to wrap up the road trip. And then you go into the weekend tied for fourth in the league with Alabama, a half game behind Texas and Texas A&M. Texas finishes, I think, against Missouri. So they're going to finish 19-10 in the league. It's going to be hard to catch Texas. Texas A&M plays Mississippi State. That could be really interesting. Alabama plays Ole Miss. That could be interesting because Ole Miss just took 2 of 3 from Texas A&M, and they've had an extra couple of days to rest before that series. Now, Auburn's got to play Georgia.
Yeah, Bama-Ole Miss, the winner of that's – you talk about like major seeding implications in the postseason.
Yeah.
Like that's.
Yeah. I'm trying to see now. Auburn at 16 wins. Cannot finish 16, 54 to 13, 12. They could still finish, I guess. No, because they have tiebreakers over Oklahoma and Florida and Arkansas. It's going to be hard for them to play on Tuesday at this point. It could happen if they get swept and some other teams win, but You're playing now for a double bye, and you're playing one more win, and all questions are gone about being a national seed. I think a lot of them are gone now.
I think they're gone now, Brad.
Yeah.
I mean, Auburn's third in RPI, which matters more than any poll.
Yeah, which is the best RPI in the SEC.
That's correct. That's correct. And I just don't I mean, we can talk about doomsday scenarios. I'm not. What about this team has shown us to, like, all right, let's expect a doomsday scenario.
That's the key. And I know sometimes we like to do that. Well, but what if this guy doesn't start well? What if this? What if that? Yeah. But for the last 6 weeks, I mean, 6 weeks, not two, not three. For the last 6 weeks now, this team has come out and shown you their identity. They've shown you that the slip-up in Tuscaloosa was the exception to the rule. They've won 7 of 9 conference series. That's their identity. That's who they are. There's no reason to expect or be overly worried about a letdown. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah. 4 games against conference champs to wrap up the regular season. And
let's
then,
go. This team wouldn't have it any other way, man.
That's exactly. No, I think that's the key too, Zach, is I kind of think they've embraced it.
Yeah.
They were unhappy.
Every game's the gauntlet. Let's go.
Yeah, they were unhappy after a 10-2 win over UAB last week.
Good. Which early on, it didn't feel like they had that mindset. And over the course of the year, they've developed it.
Yeah, that's right. So love it. And
Georgia is very good. Georgia is very, very good. But do I think Auburn gets one this weekend? Yes, I do.
And if you're concerned about, like, if you think there's any chance Georgia is going to relax a little because they've clinched the regular season, they don't have a good RPI. Like, they're still trying to build their national host resume. And you'd think with as many conference wins as they have, it would be a lock, and it may be. But with that RPI, they're still trying to pour it on.
Yeah, which is interesting.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll talk more about it as we go throughout the week. That's all I have today.
That's it for today's show.
It does. Yep. Thanks everybody for watching. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe. And remember, until next time, everyone has vices. Make sure Village Vice is one of yours.